It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. In a speech to leaders of the Gulf Cooperation Council in Riyadh Sunday, President Donald Trump appealed for unity to defeat Islamic extremism. He warned terrorism has spread across the world, but the path to peace, he said, begins here.
America is prepared to stand with you in pursuit of shared interests and common security. But the nations of the Middle East cannot wait for American power to crush this enemy for them. The nations of the Middle East will have to decide what kind of future they want for themselves, for their country, and frankly, for their families and for their children.
Mr. Trump said a better future is only possible if they drive out the terrorists and extremists.
Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land. And drive them out of this earth.
The president also singled out Iran, which he said gives terrorists safe harbor, financial backing, and the social standing for recruitment. The U.S. and the Gulf Cooperation Council announced agreement to coordinate efforts against financing terrorist organizations. Mr. Trump is in the midst of a foreign trip, his first since becoming president. He will arrive in Israel later Monday, meet with Israeli and Palestinian officials before turning his attention to Europe. In Democratic Republic of Congo, a fourth person is said to have died of the deadly Ebola virus. The World Health Organization first confirmed discovery of the new outbreak May 12. There have been nearly 40 suspected cases. Authorities are monitoring more than 400 people who are believed to come in contact with the suspected patients in the remote northeast Bas-Uele province. This is VOA News. North Korea said the successful launch Sunday of a medium-range ballistic missile, the second in a week, means it's ready to be deployed for military action. The missile was identified as the Pukuksong-2, a land-based version of a submarine launch weapon. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told Fox News Sunday that Pyongyang's pursuit of nuclear and missile technology is not a pathway to security or prosperity.
The ongoing testing is disappointing, it's disturbing, and we ask that they cease that because until they cease that testing, clearly they have not changed their view. But I think we're early into the game of putting pressure on them, and one could also interpret that perhaps they're just acting out now in response to some of this pressure that I believe they're beginning to feel.
The latest missile launch was denounced also by Japan and South Korea. The last of hundreds of rebels and their families left the Syrian city of Homs Sunday under an evacuation deal with Damascus. It had been in rebel hands since the beginning of the conflict. But analyst Amin Saikal of the Australian National University said the country has been devastated.
Most of Syria is really destroyed, and even if Mr. Assad succeeds in establishing control over the entire territory, then the question would be who's going to rebuild this Syria, and in what ways the Assad regime would be able to establish effective governance across the country.
Meanwhile, twin blasts Sunday claimed by Islamic State killed several insurgents of the group Arar el-Sham in Idlib province. Forces of the Libyan National Army, loyal to Libya's Eastern Administration, Sunday launched airstrikes in the southern Jofa region in apparent retaliation for an attack Thursday on an LNA airbase that killed more than 140 people. Meanwhile, Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, visited one of 40 detention centers in Libya, expressed alarm over humanitarian conditions.
I'm told that in some of them the conditions are even more difficult than in this one, so we will continue to work with IOM and the authorities to improve the situation. These detention centers really need to become more of reception centers where the conditions of living, the separation of men and women, and other important protection aspects are taken care of.
Libya is the main departing point for refugees and migrants trying to reach Europe. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan Sunday was elected leader of the ruling AK Party following last month's narrow referendum victory, giving him authority to be both president and head of his party. In the Afghan capital Kabul, a German aid worker and an Afghan guard were killed, a Finnish national abducted late Saturday. All had been working for the Swedish aid group Operation Mercy. The final performance of the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus took place late Sunday in New York, ending nearly 150 years of what became known as the greatest show on earth. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, May 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President Donald Trump calls for a united front against global terrorism.
If we do not stand in uniform condemnation of this killing, then not only will we be judged by our people, not only will we be judged by history, but we will be judged by God.
As U.S. President Donald Trump speaking Sunday in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, Somalia's government says President Trump's speech gives hope that the day of freedom from Al-Shabaab terrorists is at hand. South Sudan tops this year's list of most fragile states in the world, and a month-long fuel shortage in Burundi is having an effect on individuals and businesses.
Fuel shortage has been compounded by continuing power shortage in the country. Most business people are using personal generators to keep their businesses running.
That's reporter Moses Javier Rimana in Bujumbura, and we'll talk with the founder of the Fashion Africa Conference, which opens later this week in London. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Donald Trump Sunday called for a united front to combat Islamic extremism. Speaking in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, during his first overseas trip, Mr. Trump told leaders from a dozen Islamic countries to take the lead and join the United States to get rid of global terrorism.
Every time a terrorist murders an innocent person and falsely invokes the name of God, it should be an insult to every person of faith. Terrorists do not worship God. They worship death. If we do not act against this organized terror, then we know what will happen and what will be the end result. If we do not stand in uniform condemnation of this killing, then not only will we be judged by our people, not only will we be judged by history, but we will be judged by God. This is not a battle between different faiths, different sects, or different civilizations. This is a battle between barbaric criminals who seek to obliterate human life and decent people, all in the name of religion.
Mr. Trump told Muslim leaders he did not come to lecture them, but that fighting terrorism calls for standing together.
I have had the pleasure of welcoming several of the leaders present today to the White House, and I look forward to working with all of you. America is a sovereign nation, and our first priority is always the safety and security of our citizens. We are not here to lecture. We are not here to tell other people how to live, what to do, who to be, or how to worship. Instead, we are here to offer partnership based on shared interests and values. But above all, we must be united in pursuing the one goal that transcends every other consideration. That goal is to meet history's great test, to conquer extremism and vanquish the forces that terrorism brings with it every single time. With God's help, this summit will mark the beginning of the end for those who practice terror and spread its vile creed.
President Trump said the United States is prepared to stand with them in the pursuit of shared interests and common security. But he said Middle East nations cannot wait for American power to crush their enemy for them. Mr. Trump said a better future is only possible if they drive out the terrorists and extremists themselves.
It's a choice between two futures, and it is a choice America cannot make for you. A better future is only possible if your nations drive out the terrorists and drive out the extremists. Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land. And drive them out of this earth.
President Trump arrives in Israel later today, where he will hold talks with both Israeli and Palestinian leaders during the course of his two-day visit there. Somalia's government says President Trump's speech on Sunday in Saudi Arabia gives hope that the day of freedom from al-Shabaab terrorists is at hand. Information Minister Abdi Rahman Omar Osman says if Somalia is at peace, then the rest of the world will also be at peace.
Somali government is very pleased and welcome the speech of the President of the United States at the Arab Islamic and U.S. summit in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. This is an opportunity that the world has been waiting for Arab and Islamic countries and the United States to work together in fighting terrorism. Our country has been waiting for these kind of opportunities, global commitment, desire, from the President of the United States, as well as the King of Saudi Arabia, as well as other Arab and Islamic countries. It gives us hope that Somalia will be peace and stable in the near future, as we are relying on our friends and allies on this front.
Well, Mr. Minister, you know that the President also called on the Islamic countries to do your best to make sure that whoever in your country responsible for financing terrorists should do your best to make sure that those persons are eradicated from the country, meaning don't let the terrorists have hold in your countries.
In Somalia, as you are aware, for the last 10 years, we have been very successful in combating terrorists, even though we are trying our best level with the support of the African forces and with the support of our allies and friends, the likes of the US and UK and EU. Nevertheless, this is an issue that it's a global, and terrorists breed where there are lawlessness, where there are no stable governments. So Somalia to have stable government and a strong national force that can really bring peace and stability to our country is the only way out of the morass that we face in our country. So, and on one hand, we are trying to reach out to our young Somalis who have been brainwashed by terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab, but we cannot do all that without the capability and the necessary means to combat this. And that's why the kind of summit is happening in Riyadh is really helping not only Somalia, but the world. If Somalia is peace, then the rest of the world will be peace too.
Minister, your country was one of the countries listed on the president travel ban. Did you hear anything in President Trump's speech in Riyadh that gives you any hope and courage about the travel ban and other issues?
All these issues are interlinked. So once we bring peace and stable, I'm sure the Americans will come to Somalia as a holiday. But at the moment, because of the current situation in the country, where we are on one hand fighting with terrorists, Al-Qaeda and its supporters of Al-Shabaab, on the other hand, we are building necessary institutions, democratic governance, that our country is so in need. And one of the things that our country will have to tackle is the poverty and the underlying root causes that breed for terrorism. And our young people do not go to school because of the chaos and some of the areas that Al-Shabaab still control. Our children do not have the necessary hopes for them to find a job so they can be a good citizen to our people. In our country, we do not have the infrastructure that is necessary for our economy to grow. So we are at a time where we are fighting not only for terrorism, but we are fighting for poverty, we are fighting for drought.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is Somalia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mogadishu. Today is Monday, May 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. A month-long fuel shortage in Burundi is having an effect on individuals and businesses. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
Most of the businesses in Burundi are affected directly or indirectly by the ongoing fuel shortage in the country. Earlier this month, the Burundi government announced that a technical problem at the country's revenue authority was responsible for the shortage. The government also said the issue had been resolved. It is 1 month since then, and the fuel shortage crisis continues. Kome Manirakiza is the Burundi Minister of Energy.
There is a technical problem which now the government is trying to resolve. I want to tell people that the situation from now on will improve, though it may take some time to get back to normal. We are going to make much effort than for the other past few weeks to make sure transport gets back to normalcy in the country.
Fuel station owners and managers have stayed away from commenting on the ongoing fuel shortage, but some have linked the crisis to the lack of foreign reserves in the central bank. Taxi drivers in the country now have to go to neighboring countries to get fuel for their cars. Juma is a taxi driver in Bujumbura.
For now, we are not working as we used to because of the fuel shortage. Sometimes we queue for 3 days and still end up without getting fuel. I decided to go to Uvira in Congo, which is 15 kilometers from Bujumbura. That's where I fill my car and come back to work, though it costs a lot, but we don't have any other option.
Fuel shortage has been compounded by continuing power shortage in the country. Most business people are using personal generators to keep their businesses running. Sabamutima Everest is a dealer in fresh milk in Bwiza, a suburb of Bujumbura.
Electricity is really a big problem here in our area. Even when we get electricity, it can only last for 10 minutes and then goes off and comes back after 24 hours. Our milk always go bad and we incur losses. I used to buy 30 liters, but now I reduce to between 10 and 15 now.
According to the World Bank, Burundi's inflation rate for the first quarter of this year was at 8.7% compared to the 2016's 5.5%. And the 2017 forecast is expected to reach double digits of not less than 10%. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
South Sudan tops this year's list of most fragile states across the world, according to a U.S.-based research organization, Fund for Peace. The group says South Sudan's deepening food insecurity and the ongoing violent conflict make it the most fragile nation in the world. A government official denies South Sudan is a fragile state, but admits the country faces big challenges, including food insecurity. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The Fragile State Index, now in its 13th year, assesses 178 countries based on 12 social, economic, and political factors. The Fund for Peace says a fragile state is characterized by a weak or ineffective central government that has little practical control over much of its territory, such as failure to deliver public services, widespread corruption and criminality, and involuntary movement of populations. The Fund for Peace says South Sudan tops this year's list because all of those things are happening in the country, along with the government's decision to suspend elections 2 years ago. South Sudan Deputy Information Minister Akolpol Kordit calls the report's findings unfounded and false.
Business are being conducted and transacted. Government is functioning in all the states and at the national level. The peace agreement is being implemented. In fact, the level of the scales of violence have dropped dramatically and significantly across the country. No more major fighting. So you wonder what South Sudan is talking about the report.
Abraham Awolich is a senior policy analyst at the Juba-based think tank, the Sud Institute. He too disagrees with the criteria the Fund for Peace uses to rank fragile states.
The tool of measuring people is biased, in a sense that we are not on the same page, and therefore we cannot be evaluated on the same page. Perhaps if you were to rank us from the perspective of countries gaining independence 5 years after independence, what they have done, and now you compare us with those who have gone through similar experiences 5 years into their independence, then maybe that would be a legitimate way of ranking South Sudan.
But Awolich says it is clear that South Sudan has big problems politically and economically.
It is not for us to deny that our country is not doing bad. We are doing very bad.
Last year, Somalia topped the list of most fragile states. The country's ranking improved slightly due to a drop in battle-related deaths in the ongoing conflict with the Al-Shabaab militants. Other countries in the Fund for Peace 2017 Very High Alert category include the Central African Republic, Yemen, Syria, and Sudan. Cordes says while he believes South Sudan does not fit into the category of most fragile states, he acknowledges that ongoing fighting causes hunger but blames rebel fighters for the suffering across the country.
We are aware of this acute food shortage which was caused by concentration of rebel attacks that obstructed humanitarian movement, the banditry activities that were also being conducted by rebels. But I think this has been addressed now.
Cordy denies that thousands of South Sudanese continue to flee the country because of the continuing violence and food insecurity. The United Nations says South Sudan is now the leading country in Africa with the highest number of refugees in neighboring countries, including Ethiopia, Uganda, and Kenya. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The Fashion Africa Conference will kick off on Thursday this week in London. It will bring together industry insiders to talk about design, manufacturing, supply side infrastructure, and more. Founder Jacqueline Shaw says there is no other event like it. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about why she founded the conference 6 years ago and how she hopes it helps develop the fashion industry on the continent.
The strategy and the scope behind it has always kind of remained the same, and that is to create a platform where those in the industry, different stakeholders and actors could get together and really discuss what is the situation happening on the continent right now in regards to fashion manufacturing, to help promote the supply chain there and to encourage trade. But we really wanted to be like a catalyst. They're always called like a catalyst in the industry that will help change perceptions of fashion and textiles in Africa. That's really the focus of raising awareness that there is a manufacturing industry in Africa for fashion, and to highlight some of the key points that are happening on the continent in that industry right now.
How does the conference hope to reach these goals?
Firstly, just by having it, it just raises that interest, because, you know, I do get emails from, you know, very interesting people from, you know, news to government officials. Like, we've got the International Trade Center, we've got European Commission who are coming to speak, and they're interested because they may be doing projects and they want to know more. We have retailers who have shown interest in coming because they're hearing about the continent. They're hearing about countries, key countries like Ethiopia or Rwanda, or like you just spoke about Senegal, which is, you know, they're setting up new manufacturing units there, and these companies want to know more. So there's not any other conference focused on African fashion manufacturing out there, or just African fashion supply chains.
What are some of the best fashion trends at the moment coming out of Africa?
Africa's a very different and unique market. You know, you've got the industry that's focused on its own local industry, which is generally informal, and then you've got an industry that is exporting clothing for life through the AGOA, which you're probably aware of, and that's mostly like more basic products for the USA market, t-shirts or the uniform, things like this. But when it comes to trends, it's different. It's more about the needs for the continent, and then there's, you know, there's whole new subcultures happening. There's different expressions of where, like, especially like young African, because Africa's a very young continent, so there's lots of different expressions through the arts and music and fashion, all, you know, becoming one right now. But I would just say, for the industry as a whole, I would say the kind of interesting things that are happening is really the things like online retail, which is really popping up big for, you know, Africa itself. The made in Africa, people, there seems to be like a pride for that. So fashion that is made in Africa, especially like, you know, you've got your Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana, those kind of markets where there's a lot of pride of that. And developing local techniques. So you have designers at the moment who are using things like they're tapping into, like the indigo dyeing or the hand weaving.
That was Jacqueline Shaw, founder of the Fashion Africa Conference. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from London. Time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the results of the Under-17 African Cup of Nations currently ongoing in Gabon. Following the conclusion of all group matches at the weekend, all four semi-finalists are now known. Niger and Mali secured their places in the semi-finals on Sunday in Gabon to qualify for the FIFA World Cup in India in October. Mali beat Angola 6-1 in a Group B match at the Stade de l'Amitié Sino in Libreville on Sunday night. Niger beat Tanzania 1-0 at the Stade Pojenti on Sunday night to make it to the semi-finals of the 2017 Under-17 African Cup of Nations. On Saturday, Guinea and Ghana booked their places in the semi-finals of the Under-17 AFCON in Gabon after a 0-0 draw between both sides in the final matches in Group A in Libreville. The point was enough for Guinea to finish as group runners-up and secure a place at the World Cup in India in October. In the other Group A game, Cameroon beat host Gabon 1-0 in Pont-Gentil. The result was not good enough for Cameroon to progress, ending the tournament in third place in the standings ahead of Gabon, who had already been eliminated. And now to the World Cup, where Zambia got their 2017 FIFA Under-20 World Cup campaign off to the perfect start by defeating Portugal 2-1 at the Jeju World Cup Stadium on Sunday to move top of Group C. The other African representative, Guinea, suffered a 3-0 loss to host South Korea on Saturday. Next up for Zambia is a clash against Iran on Wednesday. For the Amajita of South Africa, their campaign got off on a losing note as they surrendered a long goal lead and allowed Japan to beat them 2-1 in Suwon earlier on Sunday. South Africa will now take on Uruguay in their next Group D match on Wednesday, with Zambia facing Iran on the same day, as both matches are expected to kick off at the same time. And to Egypt, where Egypt national team coach Hector Cooper has asked 10 foreign-based players to join a close camp in preparation for the game against Tunisia in the first round of the 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifiers. And now to the performance of some African footballers plying their trade in Europe at the weekend. Gabon star Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scored twice on the final day of the season to equal Ghana's Tony Yeboah's enviable Bundesliga record. Aubameyang on Saturday became only the second African player after Tony Yeboah to win the Golden Boot in Germany two times. Elsewhere, Ghana striker Jordan Ayew struck his debut goal for Swansea City, who defeated West Brom at home to end the season on a high note. The Swans ended the testing Premier League season with a 15th place finish, as Jordan Ayew's first strike earned a 2-1 victory against West Brom at the Liberty Stadium. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you a summary of African news, U.S. President Donald Trump on Sunday called for a united front to combat Islamic extremism. Speaking in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, during his first overseas trip, Mr. Trump told leaders from a dozen Islamic countries to take the lead and join the United States to get rid of global terrorism. So, Somalia's government says President Trump's speech Sunday in Saudi Arabia gives hope that the day of freedom from al-Shabaab terrorists is at hand. And that's it for this Monday, May 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, hoping you will have a productive week.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the significance of Africa Day. Africa Day commemorates the creation of the Organization of African Unity on May 25, 1963. The historical and cultural meaning of Africa Day.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.